Welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Braltz.
John Steinbacher, there's no hey there here.
No hey there.
I'm just there.
None of that hey there.
No politeness, just right to business.
That's right.
Well,
and
look at
it's,
you.
It's been busy the last couple of weeks here in sports. We'll talk about some
sports.
Fun things.
Everywhere
it's
else.
It's been busy everywhere.
Busy everywhere. Sports, no exception. We'll get a little preview of the NBA season with Bandwagon contributor Travis T-Dog Tate coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. He'll give us some of his thoughts on the young NBA season, and I'll have a tip for Bulls fans on what they should do since their team is so bad. You know, who should you follow if you want to kind of keep your hands in what's going on in the NBA this year?
My tip is wait till they fire Gar Pax, as they called him.
Ah, yes, Gar Foreman and John Paxson, yes, general manager and president.
I'll keep that to myself. I'll just let Travis do his own thing.
All right, very good. We'll hear from Travis in just a bit. We'll also have some controversy for you dealing with Major League Baseball and managers, and we'll have our status update. But first, just a kind of a roundup of some of the stories that have caught our eye here over the last couple of weeks. The Athletic, we talked to John Greenberg, who's the editor of The Athletic Chicago, several weeks ago, but The Athletic's CEO made some interesting comments, I believe, to the New York Times. Is that right, John?
Yeah, there was quite an article in the New York Times, and it was an interview with the two founders, and John Greenberg talked quite a bit about how they're, you know, from Silicon Valley, you know, that type of thing. It's a sort of a different approach. And here's the poll quote that kind of got them into trouble, and basically, you know, we will wait out every local paper and let them continuously bleed until we are the last one standing. Alex Mather, a co-founder of The Athletic, said in an interview in San Francisco, we will suck them dry of their best talent at every moment. We will make business extremely difficult for them.
So, that's so friendly.
Yeah. I mean, and then, of course, everyone is in Silicon Valley. Yep, that's the language of Silicon Valley. So you could tell that where they're coming from and what they're trying to do. And, I don't know. I haven't seen, probably most of the employees like Jonathan Greenberg haven't seen anything from them. But, you know, it's kind of a very different take than what we hear from him.
Yeah, it is. And I think from the local perspective, you know, those guys are just trying to make a living and keep their part of the website going and everything. I'm sure that raised some eyebrows from them as well. But, yeah, Lisa, I think it just kind of made everybody say, whoa, we thought this was just this little plucky little startup, and
right,
here they are trying to take over the world.
Well, I think of something analogous in public media, what that would be like, you know, like, or just like thinking of the kinds of things that we do here. And if we had owners, if we were commercial and they were coming in and saying, we have this business model, I don't know if I would want to make things for an organization like that. Like, there are people here who care about sports. They're making the art. It's not about the profit and loss sheet. It's not about those things. They're in it because they want to do something different. And so I think to have ownership come in and be like, using this language just really struck me. We will suck them dry of their best talent at every moment. Let them continuously bleed. Last one standing. It sounds so warlike,
right,
or something.
And I think he immediately had to apologize that day within 24 hours. But it just strikes me as so different. And they have a real opportunity. It's like we heard when we talked to Greenberg, which was, you know, a lot of these newspapers have sort of de-invested in local content. And while sports stories are there, they're sort of not on the beat the same way they maybe used to be. They're just, you know, there's some guy writing a column and doesn't even, maybe just watches some of the game on TV. You know, when we heard from Jonathan Greenberg, he was kind of saying, you know, this is an opportunity for local sports that just, you know, sort of is waning in other ways. So, you know,
yeah,
I think they had the opportunity to really make themselves look good, and instead they didn't.
Well, I'd be curious to talk to Jonathan Greenberg now and see, like, privately. I'm not sure he would publicly talk about what the owner said, but just to get his take on, like, so if apologies notwithstanding, that kind of sets a tone. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Especially when the Times, or, you know, picks up a story like that, that gets out to a lot of people who might not have otherwise paid attention to it.
Right. That might be a lot of people's first impression of The Athletic.
Exactly.
You know, as opposed to, you know, John and I and you, we had seen them kind of building this up over the last couple of years, and really just kind of hitting their stride, hiring some really prominent national writers like Ken Rosenthal from Major League Baseball, Seth Davis for College Hoops. They've got some good college football writers as
well. And the people in Chicago they hired were people that you in particular had already been following and enjoyed their stuff. So it wasn't like, you know, you're just hiring a couple. You're not hiring a couple, you know, 19-year-olds right out of school. Not that there's a problem with that, but it's not like the typical startup culture, I guess.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens
with this.
And what the attitudes toward the athletic are as they go forward. I mean, you're got a subscription model. You need paying customers to make that thrive. Also in sports media, kind of an interesting saga with Barstool Sports, John. And I know it's not a website or a something that we've followed all that closely, but they've really popped up here recently.
Right. Well, it's a longtime website. I guess and I don't really follow it or whatever, but it's a blog basically. You would almost call it like an even more juvenile version of Deadspin, which is already pretty juvenile in a lot of ways. I think, you know, but they're very popular amongst a certain demographic, that being, you know, younger than you and I males, which is something that ESPN in particular would really like to. They have a very very popular podcast called Pardon My Take, which is hosted by, Dan Big Cat Katz and PFT Commenter, who apparently has no real name. And so anyway, it's a very popular podcast. I know some people actually here listen to it who are younger than us. Well, basically, ESPN, you know, they're sort of in that phase where that MTV was, you know, a couple decades ago when they're like, oh, people don't really actually want to watch videos anymore. And now ESPN is at this place where they're losing viewers because people can watch live sports in other ways. They don't have that firewall that they used to be for cable. Oh, I have cable, try and watch live sports. Well, you can find it other ways. So they're trying to attract younger viewers. And one of the ways they thought they could do this was by having a Barstool show, which they wanted to be an offshoot of Pardon My Take, but apparently Barstool insisted on having Barstool in the name, so it's called Barstool Van Talk. Anyway, long story short, they got this show on the air that was supposed to be an offshoot of the podcast that they wanted to attract younger viewers. It was going to air on ESPN2 at 1 a.m. It actually turns out that Barstool Sports has been home for a lot of nasty things, including some very sexist commentary, and I'm not going to say it here. We'll link to it if people want to read it, towards someone who the ESPN network is trying to boost up right now. She's the new host of the NFL show, Sunday NFL Countdown, Samantha Ponder. She was vehemently opposed to this hire for that reason. Apparently, the comments didn't come from either one of two of the hosts of the show, but from the founder of the site. She complained about it. They decided to do it anyway. Apparently, they were getting a lot of internal pushback from employees. This article I read has all kinds of good information on that, and I won't go into the details. Long story short, right before the first episode had aired, Samantha Ponder tweeted out, you know, some of the things that had been said about her and said she was, you know, pretty upset that the show was coming on. They decided to air the first episode anyway, but then I guess internally, you know, she had a lot of support from other staff. And then the president, whose name is John Skipper, decided to end the show after one episode. So a lot of controversy there in terms of navigating what ESPN is trying to do with younger viewers, but also obviously they knew what they were getting into.
I'm totally like Hermione.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure.
No, it's okay. I just want to make sure I don't forget.
Yeah.
And you keep saying younger viewers. I think it's fair to say younger male viewers.
Yeah, I was trying to. That's what I was trying
to. This is. They're not trying to attract younger female viewers in any way. They're not.
No.
That's totally not it. And also, the word juvenile has come up. And again, it's like, who's being juvenile? Define juvenile. Childlike. Well, it's a bunch of dudes being childlike, I'd just like to add. Like, juvenile in this case is not like just childlike behavior. It's
harmful,
too.
Well, that's a word I used. I don't know if it's...
Well, I think I've seen it in other places, too. It's just, it's harmful. And behaving like a child is not necessarily harmful. These are adults who know better. I'm all for juvenile behavior. I mean, you guys know me. Like, you know. But calling that Again, because I've read this in other I've read about this in several other places. Calling it juvenile is not particularly accurate, I don't think. It's I don't know. It's just weird. So, yeah.
Maybe just
that's
sexist.
My take. It's sexist. There's a lot of isms, I think, that are being taken on there, but largely sexist. And I also find the internal pushback interesting, especially in the wake of Jemele Hill. I mean, the network has just had a lot of problems, and I think they've got a couple shiners now, and you know they're gonna they have to really think about what they're doing.
It is interesting that the article notes that ESPN talent, including Rachel Nichols, Jemele Hill, and Kate Fagan, had all appeared on the Pardon My Take podcast previously. So,
well, sometimes I feel like that's sort of like coming in to try and save something from being terrible. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't listened to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't either. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, none of us have really had a lot of interaction with Barstool Sports, and I don't know that any of us are really going to go out of our way to go there, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just something that caught our eye here over the last couple of weeks. Last thing here, of course, the World Series. We won't get into too much about breaking down, you know, the last couple of games coming up here. We're talking on Tuesday morning, so Game 6 is tonight, Houston leading 3-2. I think the main thing that we've taken out of this World Series is it's been insane. I did not get to watch the game Sunday night. I was driving back from Iowa, and then I just decided not to turn it on because I would not be able to turn it off and just go to bed. So I wake up the next day and see it was 13-12 in 10 innings. I mean, how crazy is that?
Right. So here's my story. Not that you asked, but I'm going to tell my story, my Sunday night story. So the game starts, and before I know it, it's 4-1. I am rooting for the Astros, by the way. Apropos of nothing, it's not like I've loved the Astros forever, but they did have cool uniforms back in the olden times, so I guess that's probably part of it. Anyway, so it was 4-1. I was like, I'm out. I'm going to take a shower. Mm-hmm. I come out of the shower literally 10 minutes later, and it's 4-4. And I thought, great, I'm going to bed. Like, I don't need to watch this. They don't need my help. And then when Jim came upstairs, he's like, it's 7-7, but we're going to sleep. And then I wake up in the morning fully not expecting to see the score, as you mentioned, of 13-12. And I'm still not exactly sure what happened in that game. So, but the Astros won, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's going to happen tonight.
Side note, there's been more chatter about the baseballs just with all the home runs being hit. Not only the seams that we had talked about.
They're slick.
Yes, they're more slick than even the regular
season
baseball.
Can't throw the slider, right?
That's right. You can't get the grip to get the slider.
I was like in line at Starbucks or something and overheard a conversation by two people that I would not have pegged to be having a conversation about baseball talking about that exact issue. I wanted to jump in and be like, have you listened to the Bandwagon podcast? We've discussed this.
So, yeah, a wild World
the
Series.
The question is, does Robert Manfred, the commissioner, that he probably likes the scoring and he likes the home runs. Does he like the fact that these games are lasting like 5 hours?
Yeah, that's the other thing, that 13-12 game did last legit 5 hours. I love baseball, and I love crazy baseball games, but that's too long for me.
Well, and like if you have kids like my brother, my nephew is 8, loves baseball, breathes it, eats it, sleeps it. It's his life. That kid's been to more baseball parks around the country than all of us have been put together. I mean, he's so into it, and it is really hard to put a second grader to bed at, you know, like, I don't know what time your kids go to bed, but it's after 9 o'clock. You think, well, you know, you're not going to miss a whole lot of game anyway. And then they end up missing half the game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's rough.
Luckily, my kids are like, ugh, baseball. Ugh.
We are watching a lot of it at 9:09 at my house. I mean, you know, there's been some MLS soccer too, but I'm not going to talk about that. But like, but the baseball has been winning these last couple weeks, I'd say.
Go baseball.
Yeah, woo. So are we going to talk about juice dogs or no?
Like, I can talk about that in the social media.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
Yeah, we'll do
preview.
So
stay tuned.
Yeah.
That's also coming up. But first, Travis T-Dog Tate makes his triumphant reappearance on the bandwagon. So stay tuned. We are pleased to be joined in the studio by our sometimes collaborator, sometimes instigator, Travis Tate, joins us in the studio to talk a little NBA as that season is underway. How you doing, Travis?
Great. Thank you for having me again. It's been a while.
It has been.
Miss you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we miss you too.
I'm back.
He's back, baby. He's back. And the NBA is back as well. The season is off and running. One thing looks pretty clear, Travis, that the Chicago Bulls are going to be pretty bad, which is not unexpected given everybody that they...
Just blurted out, Brian.
Yeah, that they traded suck. Away and...
Like, they got that one guy.
Yeah, that one guy.
Yeah.
Well, he's
who is that one guy?
Wait, he's like a rookie, and he's averaging like
His name is Laurie.
Yeah, that guy.
Markkanen?
Yeah. Yeah, Markkanen.
They also have that other guy who's not coming back because of punching. Sorry.
Yeah, and there's been the off-court fight already for the Bulls as well. That's put one of their players out for quite a while. So
that during a game or was that during practice?
That was like practice.
Yeah. Right before the season started.
We're talking about practice.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, we are.
Sorry.
And I guess one thing I'm curious about, for Chicago Bulls fans who, might want to at least stay somewhat interested in the NBA for reasons other than seeing where their team's going to be in the draft lottery this year, is there a team that you might say, hey, you might just follow these guys just to kind of, stoke the NBA fires this season?
I think the last time I came on with you guys, I was talking about all the teams who are located in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe these fans of the Bulls are, people from Illinois or Indiana or Wisconsin. You've got a few options. The most obvious option is probably to become a fan of the Minnesota Timberwolves because they have so many former Bulls players and even the former coach, Tom Thibodeau. Jimmy Butler, who made his name as a Chicago Bull, he's now in Minnesota. And they look like they might be pretty good, so that'll be a fun team to follow this year. There's also, another Midwest team who might be kind of scrappy and maybe a little bit better than they were supposed to be this year is the Indiana Pacers. Victor Oladipo is a Indiana University guy, and so he's back in the state of Indiana after he was traded in the Paul George trade with Oklahoma City. And then I guess the last one would be the grit and grind Memphis Grizzlies. They are still they're just so solid year after year, and they've gotten off to another good start. It's still obviously very early in the NBA season, but they are pretty good again. So you've got some options if you're this fan who lives in the St. Louis area or something, and you're wondering, what am I supposed to do now that the Bulls are terrible and you can't really see the light with them in terms of moving forward. They do have Lauri Markkanen, who's kind of an interesting rookie.
He's Finnish.
Is he Finnish?
He's Finnish. I just Googled him, and he's with a name like Markkanen. That was sort of the giveaway. When you said his name was Lauri Markkanen, I found him.
That's good.
Hey. He sounds Finnish.
And he's 7 feet tall. Right. He's a 7 foot tall Finn Viking guy.
Very nice. Yeah. And so he's a classic example of kind of where the NBA is headed, because although he is 7 feet, he's kind of mostly known for his outside shooting. And yet again, we're going to have an NBA season dominated by the talk of how important the three-pointer is.
All right. Very good. So, I think Timberwolves sounds like an appealing option to me. What do you got, Lisa?
I just have a question about the Bulls coach. Do you think he has like buyer's remorse or regrets coming to the Bulls?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I haven't
looked a lot very deeply into it. I just wanted to get your opinion.
Rumors were started, last year, I guess, prior to John Gross being fired at Illinois, that the guy who was going to follow him would be Fred Hoiberg, because everyone figured that Hoiberg was kind of looking for a way out. Because the team is bad and he hasn't really proven maybe to be that successful of an NBA coach. And, he made his name and all of his money as the coach at Iowa State. So maybe they're figuring that he wanted to come down to Champaign and kind of rework what he had going at Iowa State. But does he have buyer's remorse? I mean, he's got to. This team right now has a few injuries and things, and people are punching each other, and the front office isn't very coherent with its message and the team that it's trying to put on the floor. So they're generally kind of the worst show in the NBA right now.
So I have a follow-up to that, just about coaches who are successful in college making the jump to the pros. Why does it work for some and not for others?
I mean, if I knew that, I'd be like an agent for some great coach.
And then it seems like some of them are kind of in the middle. Like they're sort of like he's sort of a worst case scenario, it seems like. Like what's happening with his team. But then there's these other guys, like didn't Billy Donovan, isn't he coaching a pro team now? And what's his name from Butler that went to the Celtics?
Brad Stevens. Yeah.
Like I think everybody thought Fred Hoiberg was gonna really turn it around there.
And in his case, he was kind of known for running an NBA-style offense while he was at Iowa State, and so I think a lot of people figured that he would be okay. I think a lot of the NBA has much more to do with managing personalities than it does the X's and O's of the plays that you're running. And Brad Stevens and Billy Donovan are similar in the way that they are revered throughout the NBA because they do have solid X's and O's, but they're also well-known for kind of getting along with their star players.
Speaking of getting along with their star players, are we just basically twiddling our thumbs until Golden State wins again? I know they're off to a relatively poor start for them. They're only 4-3, which is shocking.
It is shocking whenever they lose a game.
Yeah,
I think especially with this new version of the team where they've got Kevin Durant. I think we are twiddling our thumbs until that happens because I don't know if there's the next tier of Western Conference stud teams are going to be able to compete with them. So, for instance, a lot of people figure that the San Antonio Spurs, the Houston Rockets, and Oklahoma City Thunder are going to sort of be the second, third, and fourth best teams in the West. But I don't know if they're going to be able to compete at the level of Golden State, even as good as they are. And then Minnesota is kind of one of those teams that's fighting to make the playoffs, along with Memphis, a couple of those teams that we mentioned earlier. So, when Golden State gets their stuff together, they're probably going to be the dominant team, especially. I mean, we got so far to go. You know, the playoffs start in late April. The typical NBA season has only just barely started. This is the first year when they've begun the season this early. And so maybe they're just still kind of hungover from last year's title.
Certainly possible. Let me ask you, I'm a longtime Lakers fan, have been since Magic Johnson days in the 80s. And honestly, there hasn't really been much to watch in the last few years with the Lakers.
Yeah.
Even in Kobe's last few years when he was just a shadow of his former self. What do you think about Lonzo Ball? Is he the real deal here? Is he going to give me a reason to watch this team here in the next few years?
Well, it's not only just Lonzo Ball for you as a Lakers fan, because there's four other very young Lakers, highly touted draft picks and guys who have begun to already show that they might be pretty good players, potential all-stars even. Kyle Kuzma was a second-round draft pick or like a relatively late draft pick, and he was kind of one of the best players in all of Summer League this past summer for the Lakers. In addition to, they've got Brandon Ingram and Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle, among others. But Lonzo Ball, I mean, I just wish you could sort of separate like his dad and that entire other side of him from what he is on the floor. He does look like he's pretty good. He's not shooting well, but he does rebound and make plays for the Lakers. So, I think he's going to be all right. I cover the New Orleans Pelicans pretty closely for the Pelicans SB Nation site, and they played the Lakers a while ago. And he looks all right. He's still a rookie, obviously. He's only played about 5 NBA games ever, but I think hopes are high for him. He's got such a team-first style. He's kind of known for him passing the ball ahead like 30 or 40 feet to begin a possession. So he's kind of a good guy to follow and would be a nice teammate to have if I were a player out there. But as of right now, they're just too young.
Sure. And, of course, they've got a new coach as well, and a fairly new coach in Luke Walton, who came from Golden State. Is he running a lot of the same type of stuff that Golden State runs, or is he doing some different stuff as far as what you've seen so far?
I'm sure he's trying, and I'm certainly not a Lakers expert, but, what they want to do is hopefully have get the ball as soon as possible. And then
I'm surprised it took that long for that to come up.
Yeah, right. Get the ball and get the ball moving. And, you know, they'll be playing really fast, I imagine, in the next few years with ball as their point guard. And he can sort of distribute the ball to where it needs to go.
We all, but I know Lisa in particular loves to talk about or think about, you know, jerseys and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I know Nike just released a new NBA jerseys, and of course, like the first game, famously, LeBron James's jersey ripped down the back. I haven't heard anything since. I know it was like a huge thing right as soon as it happened. As Nike fixed the jerseys, is there still controversy, or was this kind of a freak thing?
Was he just hulking out of his clothes? Like, yeah, exactly. Hulk smash.
Literally the, that Hulk Hogan gif, I think I at-mentioned Bandwagon Podcast on there, because a number of jerseys have torn thus far in the season. I would note, I don't remember which game I was watching. I have the NBA League Pass, so I kind of watch anything that's on, whether it's a random, you know, Philadelphia game or Sacramento or whatever. But one of the commentators on one of those games was noting that it might be good to have these jerseys be tearing instead of getting your finger caught in an opponent's jersey or something. And you can, like, break your hand, break your finger. I think it was either Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul maybe 2 or 3 years ago who broke their hand getting it caught in someone's jersey. Figure, well, if your finger gets into somewhere where it's grabbed the jersey in a weird way, it's better to have the jersey rip than have someone break their finger
it's
or hand.
It's sort of like, you know, with computers having those magnetic chargers that pop out when you're
totally.
Inevitably trip over the wire that you have. And instead of destroying your computer, you feel like an idiot. But, yeah, it's funny, this headline that I just found, because I had not heard about this somehow. Nike, quote, very concerned about LeBron James' ripped jersey. They're very concerned.
Very, very concerned.
I'm glad that is the thing that's like the most of their worries right now.
Now, if they get to very, very concerned.
Oh. Right, then I think we're all in a lot of trouble.
That's serious.
So speaking of LeBron and the Cavaliers, anybody have a chance of knocking them out of the East this year at all?
Well, I've talked about this team a lot in the past. Well, first of all, Boston is kind of widely regarded as the second best team in the East, if you assume that the Cavaliers are the best team. Of course, the Celtics have already had to deal with a devastating injury to Gordon Hayward, who messed up his ankle and leg on the very first night of the season.
Really bad, really bad.
But they are very good still, because they've got Kyrie Irving, who came over from Cleveland after he requested a trade. They've got a bunch of new guys, but I've seen them play a few times already this year. I am very high on them. I think that they could totally challenge Cleveland if Cleveland is going to sort of go kind of moping along through the year. Another team that a lot of NBA heads are high on are the Milwaukee Bucks, another kind of Midwest team, a team that I've brought up on this podcast a lot before because of their superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo. He is probably the MVP of the league as of right now. He's like 22. He's about 7 feet tall. He does everything. He's very, very good. So I would look at both the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks.
All right. Very cool. Interesting. So I'm going to go all hot takey on you here. We need a prediction here. Who you got in the finals and who's winning it all, Travis?
The hottest of takes right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to say Golden State against the Cavs just because I have no reason to say. were you expecting me to say the Philadelphia 76ers against the Dallas Mavericks or something? No. Unfortunately, it's kind of one of the interesting things about the NBA. I don't know if it's good or it's bad, but you generally get the best teams in the finals as opposed to, say, baseball, where – although we do have it this year in baseball where kind of like the two best teams are – in the World Series, generally in baseball, you don't know. Like, it could be the wild card team that makes the World Series or wins it. I remember that as a Cardinals fan. Like, kind of two of like the stranger Cardinals teams have won the World Series.
Yeah.
As opposed to some of their better teams when they had like Pujols and Scott Rolen and those guys. But it's funny. I was on another podcast and we were talking about who we thought the MVP of the league was going to be, and me and the other co-host were saying, we sort of came to the conclusion that it could be either LeBron James or Kevin Durant. Like, oh, wow, that's really shocking. But that's just sort of the way it is in the NBA. You kind of have a good feel of who's going to be good before the season starts, and it's just fun maybe to watch who those kind of other teams are, the kind of like mid-tier teams that rise up and have good players.
I'm writing this down, so, you know.
Oh, boy.
We'll see. We'll see how you do.
Yeah, we'll come back in June and have this for you.
That is.
Can you imagine? We still have a whole winter to get through.
I know. Well, in the meantime, I'm sure we'll check in with Travis Tate before then on something to do with the NBA or maybe something else. Who knows? Never know what we'll ask Travis about. But Travis, great to have you back in the studio with us here on the Bandwagon.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Travis.
Thanks again to Travis Tate for joining us to take a look at the NBA. It's time now for our newest regular segment, Controversy. And it's my turn to bring one up this week. And this is actually a topic we were hoping to touch on, I think, in our last episode, but it just didn't work out with guests and booking and all that. So I'll take a look at it this week for our Controversy segment. Major League Baseball, a lot of teams changing managers. And there really doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason as to why in a lot of these cases.
Didn't win the World Series. I mean,
yeah, that's basically it. If you don't win the World Series, you're kind of at risk of being fired, it seems. The New York Yankees have their best season in several years, get farther than I think most people thought they would to the American League Championship Series. They fire Joe Girardi, their longtime manager. I don't think he'll be unemployed for long. The Washington Nationals, first time in their franchise history, win back-to-back division titles, but they didn't win a playoff series, so Dusty Baker gets fired. They've since hired Dave Martinez, the bench coach of the Cubs, to take over that position. Those are just a couple of examples of teams changing managers without much rhyme or reason. We were hoping to talk to Jonah Carey from CBS Sports about this. He wrote a kind of a detailed article about basically how it seems teams just really don't know what they're doing. Nobody knows what they're doing when it comes to changing managers. And I think, you know, his point is that in large part, we really don't know how to evaluate managers. Are you evaluating managers on how they run a clubhouse and keep things running smoothly through the season? Are you evaluating managers on the decisions they make in the games, on how they use their pitching staff, their bullpens? Are you evaluating them on, you know, how friendly they are to, say, more advanced statistical analysis and those kind of things? How are we evaluating managers?
Well, it's like, yeah, what does a Major League Baseball managerial performance review look like? Where does that feedback come from? Do they get feedback from players too? Like, our owners typically are not people who have played or coached or managed teams. Like, mm-hmm. So who's coming in to do that analysis? Well, is it all optics? What
I know the Cubs, they do exit interviews with every player mm-hmm. after the end of the season. So I'm sure.
Oh, interesting.
Sure, part of it
is 360 feedback.
Yeah,
a little bit of that in the round. Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of other clubs do that just because Theo Epstein does it, and he's sort of the whatever. So, I mean, that might be part of it. But yeah, the interesting lens to look this through is before last year, even going into the playoffs, I think Joe Maddon very much considered a high caliber players coach, you know, behind the scenes in the dugout, everybody loves him, gets the most out of people, but definitely he's also sort of an advanced stats kind of friendly guy, mm-hmm. making the right decisions. And then last year's playoffs, and then maybe some decisions he made this year, now he seems like, you know,
if a little more old school.
He seems more old school. Yeah, people think of him as like, oh, he's a good behind the scenes coach, but he's terrible at managing. Is anybody good at managing their bullpen? Maybe Francona?
Yeah, and even with Francona, one advantage he had is it seemed, I think, with Cleveland this year that basically he had all good options in his bullpen. I don't think he had any relievers with like an ERA of above 3.5 or anything like that. So he had all good options down there. And even with Francona last year, you know, he had kind of adopted the philosophy of, you know, ride Corey Kluber and Andrew Miller as far as they'll take us. Well, the Cubs got to those guys in Game 7 of the World Series because they started to get tired. And I think you're seeing that like with the Dodgers right now in their bullpen. Dave Roberts getting some grief for the way he used his bullpen in Game 5, particularly Brandon Morrow, who pitched 3 days in a row and was not effective at all his third day pitching.
I would say out of all the things in baseball that I'm noticing that has changed a lot, aside from the home runs, is how pitchers are being used.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know we've sort of discussed it, but as you know, I do not really watch baseball mm-hmm. during the regular season very much. So now that I've been watching it in postseason, I am struck by that. Absolutely struck by that. And I also, it's sort of off topic, but sort of on topic. Like, how do you make a decision to take a pitcher out even if things are basically fine? And then other times you're making a decision to leave a guy in there when things aren't fine because you want to get to a certain number of innings, or it's, we got to take this guy out because it's been five innings. So, you know, it's so different to me.
Yeah, it is. And I think what a lot of it is based around is how many times a pitcher's going through the batting order, particularly a starting pitcher. I think for most starting pitchers, they're most effective the first time they go through the batting order. Then they're not quite as good the second time. And for a lot of them, that third time through the batting order is where things get really problematic. Mm-hmm. So I think that is where a lot of those decisions are being based. But the problem is, you know, even in the playoffs where you typically have a little bit more rest, you know, days off during playoff series for travel days and things like that, you have a little bit more rest than you do during the regular season. Even with that being said, if you're not getting more than 4 or 5 innings out of your starting pitcher, that's going to put a lot of pressure on your bullpen, and somebody's got to get those outs. If
right.
it's not the starter, you've got to have enough fresh arms in your bullpen that get those outs, and I think that's where a lot of the managers are running into trouble here in the
yeah.
postseason.
I don't know. It just seems strange. And, like, so what if a team wins a World Series, but everybody on the team hates the manager or it had nothing to do with the manager? Would they fire a manager anyway and bring somebody else in new? I mean, like,
I can't
it's
recall.
Probably a dumb question, but firing guys who have been quite successful with their teams, getting them almost to the World Series, just seems sort of legitimately strange to me.
Yeah, it certainly seems like the leash is shorter now than it has been in the past, although in some cases I think there are quite a few fans, for instance, in St. Louis who are ready for a change from Mike Matheny, but ownership seems committed to him. He's, mm-hmm. I think, just finished his sixth year as manager in St. Louis. And, you know, I think a lot of fans were ready for someone different there. But ownership is committed to him through at least next year, if not longer. But I think overall, you're right. I think the leash tends to be a lot shorter. There's a lot less patience than there used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the owners. I think I see no good reason Joe Girardi got fired except for that. It seems like there was some behind-the-scenes strife with mm-hmm. management. I think Dusty Baker probably didn't deserve to get fired, but on the other hand, he has never won a playoff series, right?
Won a playoff series, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, right, I guess he won one with the Cubs. Yeah,
well, and he won a few with San Francisco.
Washington just hasn't won one.
Right, the franchise has never won one.
And unfortunately, you know, and I don't think, we'll have to see how, Dave Martinez is probably a good candidate, and we'll have to see, but, you know, you're judged, if you're the Nationals or someone like that, you're judged by your success in the postseason.
Absolutely, and I think that's where it comes in. All right, that's my look at controversy here this week. We'll have some links. I will link to Jonah Carey's article that he wrote about managers, as well as a couple of others on that topic in the show notes. All right, it is time for the status updates, where we take a look at some things catching our eye on social media. Mr. Steinbacher.
All right, we previewed this. It's going to be really exciting. It's about drugged dogs, not just any dogs, but the mystery of the Iditarod dog. So there's what do they call them?
Mushers.
Musher mm-hmm. Named Dallas Seavey, who is a 4-time champion and the most dominant musher in the sport. His dogs tested positive last spring for high levels of Tramadol? An opioid pain reliever. He actually, side note, finished second. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the problem with this is there's no proof that CV did it. They can't prove anything. And he contends it was sabotage, as does pretty much all of his competitors. Everyone agrees that this is something he would never do. It's a common excuse, of course, when, you know, anybody gets...
Listen, all y'all, it's a sabotage.
Exactly. But so the, those inside the community, this is a really interesting story because all of his friends and competitors claim it's got to be an inside job. And because of the fact that there are, you know, these are dogs doing things that maybe dogs wouldn't normally do except for people pushing them. There's a lot of organizations like, for example, PETA, who are not happy with this. So, of course, everyone...
PETA wasn't happy with dog racing to begin with. Yeah. And so
there's a lot of people who are in dog racing who think maybe someone who doesn't like dog racing drugged the dogs.
Ooh, interesting.
But it's interesting. I don't know if you saw that PETA like obviously came out and said, "Can you believe this? They're drugging the dogs." I don't really know what's going on, but it's kind of interesting. And also, you know, the people in the Iditarod are like, this is just going to be bad news for the Iditarod. But on the other hand, like, we're talking about the Iditarod. I don't even know when it is.
You don't know what it is?
When it is.
Or when it is. Yeah, I don't know when it is.
It's got to be a
winter
thing.
I'm pretty sure you knew. Yeah, well, one would think.
Anyway,
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the idea of dog racing, but you know, you go to PETA's website where they talk about it, and it's all very extremely inflammatory language and select pull quotes. And I have no doubt that the people who work with the animals love their dogs. I mean, they love their dogs. But I have to admit that the idea of giving animals performance enhancing drugs is a little crazy. And also, I learned in one of these articles that they've been drug testing the dogs since 1994. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that they've found anything untoward after all of the testing.
Wow.
So I think that's kind of wild. I'm not sure how long the Iditarod was going on before 1994 or what caused them to decide we better start testing for performance-enhancing drugs. Like if there was a trigger incident, I don't know. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, very good. All right, thanks, Joe.
Just one quick note on the animals getting tested. Apparently they test really strongly for drugs in horse racing. And Dancer's Image in 1968 tested positive for the painkiller. I'm not even going to pronounce that. And was lost its title. So
I think it's pronounced tramadol or tramadol.
Oh, no, this one
is a different one.
Phenylbutazone.
That's pretty good.
Phenylbutazone?
All right,
maybe.
Anyway, all right. Moving on.
Thanks, John. Lisa,
what
you got?
Okay, I have two, so I'll keep them relatively short. The first one is about I had posted a link internal to us on the show about how a consultant for Golden State did some work on high-fiving. And how high-fiving influenced, like, teams. And the general consensus was that the more you high-five, the better you're going to do. And that's not really a story for radio. And actually, the linked thing to this that I'm going to talk about is not a story for radio because also on Twitter, I discovered a photo from last night's Knicks game where there's three players high-fiving invisible people. None of them are looking at each other. They're all in the frame, but they're all, like, reaching to different people, but you can't see it. So it looks like three players not high-fiving anyone but sticking their hands out, which is pretty funny. Related to that, I also tweeted my fascination with the post-home run celebration in the dugout with the high-fiving. The choreography of it is amazing. So all baseball teams must get along really well because of the amount of touching that they do. After home runs or great plays or whatever, it's like high five, butt slap, forearm bump, high five. Like it looks like they planned it. It's amazing. I need to find some gifs of that. Second social media thing that I saw was that the guys from Pod Save America, a podcast that is largely about politics, had as their special guest on the podcast that dropped last night, Steve Kerr. So if people are interested, they should listen to that interview. I listened to it this morning. They touch on a lot of topics from the White House visit that wasn't, blowback that he's received as a coach because of his political views and his tweeting habits. He talks about Greg Popovich. He talks about, is that his name? Greg? No. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Sorry. For some reason, that sounded wrong to me. Colin Kaepernick, he talks a lot about his background and where he grew up, which he feels really sort of influenced his worldview. It was fascinating, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes.
All right. Very good. Mine is kind of dovetails off of my managing controversy. The new manager for the Philadelphia Phillies is one Gabe Kapler. Probably the most prominent thing about Gabe Kapler is that the dude is in probably better shape than anyone who works in this building, to say the least.
Ouch.
He's
I've been working out.
Yeah, you haven't been working out like Gabe Kapler. No offense, John. Dude's like 42 years old, built like one of those fitness models. And apparently he has a lifestyle blog / website. Apparently Gabe is not so, in tune with his workouts that he can't, enjoy things like whiskey. One quote, drinking alcohol and training for performance and lean tissue are not mutually exclusive. I'll be sharing why whiskey, weight training, muscle building, and fat burning can harmoniously exist. That's among the many articles you can read at Gabe Kapler's fitness and lifestyle website.
I saw one the other day, which is definitely not safe.
No, I didn't mention
that
one.
There's a couple that are...
A little bit.
He's got some ideas.
He does. He has some ideas.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll let people find those on their own.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, they're just, they're not... Not... I don't know. I'm going to shut my mouth.
Well, clearly, you guys don't want to talk about it. So.
Not really, no.
That's fine. That's fine.
Not so much. We'll let our listeners find that themselves. Mm-hmm. So that will, I think, wrap it up for this edition of The Bandwagon.
Hey, I just wanted to say congratulations to the three of us for having a sports podcast existing in Champaign-Urbana over the last couple of weeks and not talking about Illinois men's basketball recruiting. So congratulations to us.
Maybe next time.
No, I think it's awesome.
Is there going to be a game soon?
An exhibition game this Sunday.
Friday.
Friday?
At Easter.
No. Friday,
oh, it's Friday.
Friday.
Okay.
Friday.
Anyway, sorry. I don't want to get us off topic.
I'm okay with not talking about it. I liked what we talked about today.
Yeah, it's at EIU. It's a fundraiser for hurricane relief.
I just brought it up because I thought it was crazy and everyone talked around nothing. And then at the end, everyone was like, meh, whatever.
Ah, yes, the joys of basketball recruiting. But on that note,
I will say it's not like we didn't talk about it. We just didn't talk about it on the
air. No, I know.
So right. Yeah. Good job, guys. Restraint, that's cool.
Restraint is good.
Yeah.
All right. It's time for credits.
We ready? We want to thank you for joining us on The Bandwagon, so thank you. This episode was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Brault, and John Steinbacher. And we'd also like to thank our special guest, Travis Tate. Like, everybody, slow clap, fast clap, whatever. He's on a lot of podcasts these days, apparently, so we're very honored that he joined us. Extra thanks go to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and musical genius Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme song and other music heard within. Find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon. We link to dang near everything we discuss on this podcast. Better yet, subscribe and rate Bandwagon in iTunes. Ratings are discovery and search. Man, they're golden because algorithms, people. People talk a lot about algorithms lately. It's kind of boring. No iTunes, no big whoop. Find us pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. Just take out all the vowels and get our tweets. We love questions, links, recommendations. So feel free to call our attention to, as John would say, whatever.
Whatever, indeed.
Whatever. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for another episode about the often strange and always compelling intersections between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.